Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Did somebody name the text chain group? Is there a name for it?
It's RBs. It's called RBs.
It's called RBs. Okay.
Rich, I'm wondering, anyone have a green bubble on the text chain?
Oh, yeah.
The Androids?
Anybody screw it up by not having an iPhone?
Nah.
Would you have kicked that person off the chat? Would you have kicked him off the text chain?
Hey, we would have had to. I would call him.
Significant disclosure made by Dalvin Cook
yesterday
and Rich Eisen on the running back text chain. There are no green bubbles, all blue bubbles. Look,
I can't stand it. I don't know. Do you ever get involved in that situation? You got any group text chain where, like, one friend has an Android or a Google phone and you're like, wait, our group text messaging doesn't work? What the hell? And it just absolutely drives you crazy?
As a business person, an entrepreneur, if you will.
Oh, okay, here we
go. I'm trying not to burn any bridges toward any potential partners for this program. Trying to justify our existence, our compensation, our livelihood by not alienating any of the various phone providers out there. But I will say that there is a logo on my phone that is a piece of fruit with a bite taken out of it. And
yeah.
I prefer to only communicate with others who have the same device. That's what I'll say.
Oh, man. It's frustrating. I've been a part of, like, some family text chains. 2 years ago, I was involved. I did a little fantasy football group text chain. You know, one family member's got the Android or whatever else. And it was a crap show, constantly trying to figure out, wait, where are we? Put another group text out there. So, that's we don't have that technology yet. Are we not there yet that we can't make that work the right way between Apple and Google or some Android or whatever?
I think the idea
they don't want that. I mean, is that the deal breaker
for
Apple? They're like, whoa, we can't let them on the group.
They
text.
Want every no look. I mean, underneath that PFT sticker is
another
a
Apple
piece of fruit with a bite taken out of it. And I've had an Android phone, but yeah, they want everyone to be on the Apple phone and vice versa. It's like VHS and Beta, if anyone gets that reference, although Beta eventually died and VHS took over. These two coexist, but I know far more people that have the Apple than the other, but they both work great, and it's a new age. And, you know, I remember when we were kids and we were thinking about futuristic cities and flying cars and Dick Tracy watches. The one thing that came to fruition was basically the Dick Tracy wristwatch, where you can, you know, click a button and watch a TV show and get video and talk to people and see them while you're talking to them. And that's the one futuristic advancement we all anticipated in the 70s that came to pass. Still waiting for the flying cars.
It's coming,
still
though.
Still waiting for the futuristic cities. Still waiting for the Jetsons treadmill that is hanging out over the side of your high-rise futuristic building that you run on and your dog jumps on it too,
hey,
and you somehow don't fall to your death.
Sounds cool. It sounds cool. The flying car thing, though, it sounds like they've kind of made some progress on that. I mean, maybe
can
we will
imagine?
See that. You know?
Can you imagine?
Roads?
Can you imagine?
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Well done. Well done, Dr. Emmett Brown. But can you imagine? Traffic is hard enough to manage when everyone is on the ground in specific lanes created for the traffic. Can you imagine how in the hell do they regulate airspace? I don't think it makes sense.
No, you got planes.
You got cars. You got flying trains. What the hell else is going to be up in the air? I don't want that. I don't need that. And as fun as it would be, I mean, what goes up must come down, and you got enough ways you can crash on the ground. I don't want to throw that extra element of going from the air to the ground on top of everything you may hit while you're in the air on your way to the ground.
Yeah, well, I hear you. Well, we know you and flying and all that anyways. That's not a great thing, so we don't want it on the driving basis there. But, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think that's part of the reason, like, I don't feel that great about my kids going out on the neighborhood and riding the bike anymore. Because when I sit in my front, like, lawn on a Saturday morning and drink coffee and I got this little perch mic, I mean, 9 out of 10 people, when they're driving on the ground, are driving like this. They drive like this. 9 out of 10 people, doesn't matter where it is, they're driving like this, or they have it low so nobody could see it. And I see it, and you're right, you had fly into that. Holy crap, Batman, what the hell is going to happen?
You know, I was in the car for 12 hours on the way to Hilton Head a couple of weeks ago, 15 hours on the way back, and I saw a lot of that. And I had never noticed it before, but I saw a lot of this. And it was kind of horrifying to me. And it's almost like people
crazy.
Think they've perfected the art of being distracted.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine, and I got this. And I notice it more and more when I'm driving around. Of course, when I'm not doing this, I notice it. When I'm doing this, I don't do that.
I'm on a crusade to try to stop this. It drives me
and
crazy.
And I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But, like there's a law here that you can't use your device, and I run my device through my phone, so if I want to, like, change the music or something, you can hit the screen. I mean, what's the difference between being distracted by the screen that's in front of you? And I see on some of these cars this giant screen. It's like, are they watching a movie on that screen while they're driving? Like, it's amazing to me. It's gigantic. I think the Tesla has that big, giant touch screen.
Right.
That's an inherent distraction. What the hell were they thinking when they put this big TV set turned from horizontal to vertical and just slapped it right in the middle of the panel? Like, how is that not going to distract people when they're driving? But all the cars have that now anyway. Get off our lawns. And get off your phones.
I don't know. I don't get it. It's 5,000-pound cars and people aren't paying attention going down the highway at 80. That doesn't seem right. But, all right, on a better note, you know, it is a big day for me today. I don't know if you knew that. 19th anniversary. Danielle, my wife
wow.
and I, big day here, all right?
Wow.
So we're creeping up there. So that is kind of a big deal here in the Sims household today.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
You believe that?
You're 10 years behind me. My 29th is coming up. And just the other day was the 34th anniversary of my first date with my wife. Can you imagine? For both of us, your wife has put up with you for 19 years of marriage, plus whatever the courtship
a lot
was before
it,
that.
Right.
And I have a feeling it took a while for you to convince her to say yes to you.
Yeah.
But both of us have managed to fool one person for that long. I think we both have pulled it off somehow, some way.
Somehow. I don't know if I'm fooling her anymore now, but she's the queen of the house, that's for sure. But yeah, Mike, I met my wife right before my sophomore year in high school. I met her in August of 1996, and I can honestly say, like, crazy. I was a sophomore and an idiot and probably didn't know a lot of things, but, like, the first time I met her, I knew there was a chance I was going to marry her. I really did. It's kind of weird how it worked out.
Oh, you had the lightning bolt.
I really did.
Oh, you had the lightning bolt.
I did.
What's the Italian term for that? that's what happened. That's what happened to Michael Corleone when he saw Apollonia.
Exactly.
Although it turned out better for Danielle than Apollonia. That's good news.
Yes, it did. Exactly right. Right.
Although you live, I mean, she's from New Jersey. It is on the bingo card of possibilities.
Yeah, you never know. Right. You never
know. It's going to end up
where
like
we grew up. That's right. You never know. You might not wake up. You might be sleeping with the fishes one morning. You got to watch out.
Wow.
Big day.
So how long between meeting her and dating her? What was the lag before it finally happened?
It actually, 8 years. It wasn't that bad. Sophomore year in high school, I met her in 96. We got married in, 2004, right before my second year in the NFL. Got married like right before training camp, did one of those type of weddings, had a few days before it started, and then, ran back to Tampa, and we started our life together there and got into training camp, and John Gruden was yelling at me a few days later. And then that started, of course, we couldn't take the honeymoon, and then we went to Italy after the season, and then John Gruden calling my phone, what are you doing? Are you canoeing back from Italy? When the hell are you going to be here? So that was the start of that whole charade.
I can just hear that jerk saying it too, right? Yeah. We need to get Frank Caliendo to cut that phone call.
Oh, seriously.
Because I can hear him. I can hear him. I can't do it, but I can hear Gruden saying that. And by the way, it is the Colpo di Fulmini, the thunderbolt, as the Italians call it, that
Boom.
Struck you in August of 1996. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So she had 8 years to come to her senses, and she didn't. Yes.
She had her chances. She did, but I sucked her back in.
Okay, so tell.
Yeah.
All right. So, if you remember,
because
it's been a long time ago, and you're getting older,
right?
What was the moment that broke the ice? How did you do it? Was it like a phone call? Did you go up and talk to her? How did it come to be that you went from acquaintances to amorous relations?
Like, she moved.
Not all. I'm talking about the first. I don't want to go too far.
All right, hey, I can get details. You let me know.
No.
All right.
No, that's not what I meant. I'm just talking about the moment that there was an interaction that resulted in a date.
It was actually really weird. I pursued her more at first. The first time I met her, I was like, ooh, oh my gosh. And like I said, the lightning bolt hit me, right? And there was another, it was a friend's house, and there was another girl, who was there, and my wife had been in Florida for a few years. She was in New Jersey, she moved back to Florida, whatever. But there was another girl at the party who I kind of liked in the spring and the summer, and she didn't like me or whatever. And all of a sudden that night, she was all over me. And I was like, man, that was the one night I was like, why are you all over me? I'm trying to impress a new girl, right? So,
alcohol.
Yeah, that's kind of how
that
happened.
Explain it.
And slowly but surely, I wore her down. And, at a point where I was like, wait, I'm trying to be this girl's, boyfriend. I sent her flowers. I was trying to take her to the movies. And I was kind of getting nowhere. And, typical, relationship or woman to a degree, I gave up finally. I was like, I give up. I don't know. All I've been doing is calling and doing anything I can to be with this girl for the last month, and she's kind of giving me the cold shoulder. So I gave up. I didn't call her for a week, and then all of a sudden, like on a Friday afternoon, she was like, hey, where you been? I haven't heard from you. And it was like from that point on, we hit it off. That was like early in my sophomore year of school, and then we never looked back.
What was the first movie that you took Danielle to see?
Oh, my gosh. You're going to laugh at this. Tin Cup. You remember Tin Cup
with Kevin Costner?
Right. And I had seen it already, but I was so desperate to take her somewhere that the movie theater we wanted to go to only had like two movies. The other one was like a kid movie. And I was like, I'll just act like I haven't seen Tin Cup and take her there again and go watch that. Because I was just itching to do anything to be with her at that point. So, Tin Cup, Kevin Costner.
That's, yes, that's 1996 sport comedy. I don't think I've ever seen it. If I have, I've forgotten about
it.
It's pretty
good.
I have to go watch
it. Yeah, you
got to
watch it. There's definitely some really, really good parts there, and he definitely got some great lines and things that go on that are very funny. He's a great talent golf pro, you know, who always finds a way to screw it up and not kind of capitalize on his talents. Long story short, it's pretty good.
Kevin Costner, Rene Russo, and Don Johnson also in
it is.
Tin Cup, riding that Miami Vice wave as long as he possibly could and still is. So, wow, that was almost 96. Well, my son was born in September of 96, so it's almost 27 years ago that you had your first date. 8 years later, you finally wore her down. And it's funny to hear you tell that story, though, about being sophomore in high school. Because I got a nephew that is that age, turned 16 in March, and he's got a girlfriend now and brought her over one day last week, and they swam in the pool and they hung out the patio. And I said to him when he told me he had this girlfriend, I said, well, you know, how did this happen? Like how did it? And he's like, what do you mean? It's like, well, like, where did you meet her? And he said, like, it was at a baseball game. And I said, well, who approached whom? He said, I walked up to her and I said, I think you're cute. And it's like, well, that's far more direct than I ever would have been.
That's the way to go. It's smooth. You say that right there. And a lot of guys don't even have the guts to come up to a girl and say that. So
no, God, no. Yeah. I mean, I did after about five beers,
which
always made for a great presentation. But it's encouraging that in the age of everybody always in this thing,
that's right,
that there was actually a face-to-face interaction, not a text message.
Yes.
Because it seems like
we're losing
the way that most of the communications happen nowadays.
Yeah.
All right.
No doubt.
We're losing our show. We've lost 15 minutes of it, but that's good. Happy anniversary to you and Danielle.
Thank
Condolences
you.
To Danielle, but at least it turned out better for her than it did for Apollonia. So,
yeah, that's
right. I don't know. Maybe if Apollonia knew 19 years with you versus the quick, brief marriage with Michael, she may have just stuck with.
What's crazy is, you know, as you're saying this and all this, and I don't want to get too, like, if it's hilarious and you're bringing this up, the girl's house I met her at had a lot of those backstories, you know. That's I don't want to get too deep into it, but it had a lot of those backstories there, you know, very similar to The Godfather or The Sopranos or all that. And so it's funny you kind of brought that up and made that connection.
Well, and we have filibustered long enough to bust into some breaking news.
Yeah,
apparently.
Baby.
And I have to trust Pete when he tells us this because I don't know who's reporting it. I don't know who the source is. I'm sorry, Pete. This comes from NFL Media. Saquon Barkley, a one-year, $11 million deal to show up for the New York Football Giants with a $2 million signing bonus. So for the first time ever, and we talked about this possibility yesterday, you raised the question. They're paying him not much more. They're paying him $900,000 more than he was due to make under the franchise tag with a $2 million signing bonus. He's there. He's in camp. He's going to be there, and he's going to do what you suggested yesterday.
I mean,
he's got to have a big year now. He has no other real option. He's not going to sit out the whole season. So if you're going to show up anyway, you may as well show up now and get ready for the 2023 season and go out, kick ass, take names, and try to get paid next year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so happy. I mean, I hope he was listening to us yesterday when we were having this conversation. I think this is the right play right here. You know, and for him, ultimate, long term. I know the running backs, like we talked about yesterday, they don't have, you know, many bargaining chips or things they can do to back the team into a corner right now. So, okay, you know, it's a short shelf life of a career for the NFL running back. Go get your money right now. Go do it. I'm so happy. I'm happy for the Giants. I'm happy for Saquon Barkley. I think it is the right move. And I think it's the right move, too, to capitalize on a bigger contract in the future. Now you stay sharp, you stay fresh, you're healthy, your mind sharp from, you know, being there at camp. And, hey, you know, we'll see. We'll see what he does next. Is he going to go all out? Will he put himself on a pitch count to a degree? I don't know. He could play some hardball like that, like we talked about. But as a Giant fan, I am extremely happy that the most dangerous guy on our offense is back on the football team and going to be ready to go.
Most dangerous guy on our offense. That is unprofessional.
I'm sorry.
Unless you have a mouse in your pocket, that is unprofessional.
Yeah.
So anyway, here's the other side of it too. And again, I'm just trusting Pete here, so like, don't blame me if this ends up being wrong. There's no incentives. Pete loves this. It sounds like there's no incentives. It's just a straight $11 million. No promise that they won't refrain from tagging him again next year. So what he's looking at, if they would tag him again next year, it's a 20% raise over his cap number this year. Cap number of $11 million means 13.2 would be his franchise tender for next year. So he's looking at a two-year haul of $24.2 million if they would tag him next year as well, unless they have promised not to tag him next year, either officially or unofficially. So that's better than it would have been under 10-1. That builds into next year. I'm just surprised he didn't like push for 12.
Yeah, or I hear you there.
It just shows you how little leverage he had. The fact that the Giants did anything is significant. There have been two occasions I can recall. We talked about this yesterday, Albert Haynesworth and Lance Briggs, years ago, where teams had a formula for agreeing not to tag them a second time. This is the first time ever that a team has paid more than the franchise tender to get a guy under contract. The fact that the Giants did it, Chris, kind of implicitly acknowledges they know the tag was too low for Saquon Barkley. He got screwed by this tag.
I think so. I think it acknowledges a few things. You know, I mean, one, I think the Giants historically want to do right by their guys. And I mean guys that they draft and guys that they feel like put their best foot forward to represent the Giants organization the right way. And Saquon Barkley has been a model citizen as far as that's concerned. So, you know, I think that's where there was probably a little bit of a soft spot in their heart to get this done. And a little bit like we talked about. Again, the Giants got in the playoffs last year. I don't think you and I are sitting here ready to go, oh, definitely Giants are back in the playoffs. No doubt about it. Right? We know there's still, hey, there's going to be a little bit more of a bullseye on their back this year, certainly. You know, their new scheme and how they play is not going to catch people by surprise. They need Saquon Barkley. He's like one of those guys we talk about. He can go above and beyond the playbook. He can do things that are just extraordinary. So I think that's, you know, a few of those things probably played in their mind to finally get this done.
And we're reacting to this information as it all is happening. So it's not $11 million. It's up to $11 million, which is a huge difference. There is incentives. Only $900,000 in incentives. So it's still 10-1 on the way in the door. All the Giants did was dangle a $900,000 carrot. And I look at it this way. If you're going to dangle the carrot, make it bigger than $900,000. It just shows you that there is no leverage for Saquon Barkley. There was no leverage because your only play at this point for you as an individual, not collectively, at the running back position. There's two ways to look at this. Leverage for all running backs, leverage for one running back. The best leverage for Saquon Barkley right now is to go have the best year possible because, and this all goes back to that stupid-ass rule that cuts off negotiations on a long-term deal the middle of July, anything he does to build leverage is meaningless. Because the Giants can't give him a long-term contract. They can't cry uncle. They're crying uncle, but there's nothing they can do about it. They can't give him what he wanted. So the only way he gets what he wanted, and remember, point that I made yesterday, and this would be very controversial, and it would upset you and the mouse in your pocket if it happens. They get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
The window opens on negotiations for a long-term contract. And that day, Saquon Barkley says to the Giants, okay, I want my long-term contract now, or you play your damn playoff games without me. Would not be popular, would be hard for him to do, be hard for him to reconcile for himself to not go reap the benefits of playing a full successful season. But especially for running back, Chris, with each additional game, there's that risk. There's that risk. Torn ACL, broken ankle. What happened to Tony Pollard?
Exactly.
That's what I was just about to say.
Exactly. I'm not going to be mad at him if he does that. I hope you and I, if he wants to play hardball throughout the season, I think we'll both be there to support him. You know, like we talked about yesterday, he gets to 20 carries, he's been beat up, he wants to go, my shoulder's a little sore, it's been 20 today, sorry. I'm not going to be mad at him. And like we heard from Xavier McKinney and how we discussed yesterday, I don't think the players are going to be all that mad at him either if he puts himself on a pitch count. They understand the business. They understand the running back. And like we said, they understand how freaky the athlete is, and they're going, wait, you know, we got guys on our team making two and three times more than the freakiest athlete on our football team. So that's where he's going to have a soft spot in the locker room's heart as far as that's concerned. And he's loved by the locker room. He's loved by the organization. So I know it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, where it goes. And as you always say, Mike, and you're 100% spot on, with situations like this, yeah, they get used against players who love football. You know, it's hard to tell a football player once they get out there, hey, dial it back or put yourself on a pitch count. You know, football players are football players for a reason. They're psycho. They've got, you know, testosterone and want to macho and show everybody what they got and prove the world wrong. And that's sometimes where, you know, it can lead football players down the wrong path there.
It's one of the reasons why work stoppages don't work in the NFL. Back when your dad was playing in 1987, they went on strike. It's a combination of you're not getting paid and you're not getting to do the thing that you love to do. And it's both that motivate players to go cross the picket line, end the strike, come in and sign a franchise tender that has a meaningless big picture, $900,000 in available incentives. So the whole thing is a little confusing, but it really isn't, because there was nothing else Saquon Barkley could do. And he can count the fact that he gets an extra $900,000, technically $909,000, in incentives as a win, because he got something out of the Giants at a time when they had to give him nothing. There was nothing. They just were going to sit back and cross their arms and wait for him to show up, and he was. That's his victory in all of this, because it looks like a lot of huffing and puffing and no blowing of the house down. The reality is, and, you know, the folks that were on that running back Zoom call on Saturday night got the clear impression, one, Josh Jacobs isn't showing up for the Raiders anytime soon, and two, Saquon is showing up for the Giants. So if he's going anyway, anything he gets on top of what that $10.1 million franchise tender offered is a victory.
Yeah.
Now, there are multiple reports that there is no provision about next year's tag. So again, they can do it in 2024. It'll be 120% of whatever he ends up earning this year. And those incentives would go into the total calculation, so he could get up to 13.2 next year under the franchise tag. That was part of his frustration, though. That was articulated during the call. If I go out and have 2,300 yards, they just tag me again.
Yeah.
Just, whatever I do this year, they just say, hey, I'll tag you again. And we knew this. Look, I was talking to somebody about this last night. It's amazing that this is all of a sudden perceived as a new problem. It's been around for 15 years.
Definitely.
And this specific wrinkle for Saquon Barkley happened the moment that they did the new CBA with a minimum of 3 years until you can sign a new contract, the fifth-year option for first-round picks, and the availability of the tags. From a team perspective, and I'm not trying to piss off the running backs by saying this, but you look at it from the team's perspective, why would you not, if you take a running back in round one, especially the bottom of round one, because you still get the fifth-year option. 5 years, tag once, tag twice, that's 7 years, and then do it all over again.
Yeah.
Just do it all over again.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, the Cowboys did it after 4 years with DeMarco Murray. He set the franchise record for rushing. More yards than Emmitt Smith ever had in a season. More yards than Tony Dorsett ever had in a season. 1,845. 4 years in, and they said, see you later.
Yeah,
so
it's not fair.
That's what this system creates.
Right. You're right. It's what the system creates. It's the way it's set up right now. I'm not mad at the organizations, but it's something that's got to be addressed by, you know, the NFLPA and the next CBA and all that. You know, the fact is, and especially it hits home with the running backs, because like you're talking about, you could be sitting there as a first-round running back and be the best in football and never hit the free market like everybody else in the world would if they were really, really awesome at their job, and never get to capitalize on that. And that's BS. It is. And then this other element that you brought up that's very real, this stupid freaking we can't negotiate after a certain date, that's a bunch of BS too. That is. That's another one that's got to go. Because this is like the perfect example, too, the Giants and Saquon Barkley, where if that rule wasn't in place, I have great faith that the Giants and Saquon would have found a way to get a 3-year, 2-year, 4-year deal done that we know might only really be worth 2 or 3 years. But I think that would happen a lot in these cases. But because of this, it's, again, takes another leg or another bargaining chip away from the player and screws them over. And that's just the stuff we got to get rid of in this league right now. The owners are swimming in cash. They've got diamond, you know, like we talk about, toilet seats and crap. And when the players are fighting for...
On their super yachts.
Yeah, on their super yachts. And the players are, you know,
in the
fighting
servants' quarters
to hit a free market. And it's just a little too much swayed right now of let's screw the player over, let's make so much money while our organization continues to appreciate by $500 million every year. That's where it just doesn't seem wrong as a human to me.
But good luck getting the average fan to appreciate and understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, look. When you talk about Saquon Barkley's only going to make $10.1 million this year. He's only going to make up to $11 million. People are like, well, let's have a pity party for him. But folks, you got quarterbacks making more than $50 million. And I'm not saying that makes it dramatically less, but it is dramatically less.
Yeah.
For the guy who is in the car crash on every single play, running into the line of scrimmage, getting hit from every possible angle, all the rules are in place to protect the guy making 50. The guy making 10 is getting beaten and abused. It's part of the game. It's always been part of the game. But let's realize these numbers. See, we get blown away by these numbers because it's so much more than any of us have. I get that. I understand why fans react the way they do. But the difference between a billionaire and a millionaire is astro-freaking-nominal. And all these owners are billionaires. And 7, 8, 9 of them have these giant floating cities with diamond-encrusted toilets and these gathering areas that somebody that was in Jerry Jones' yacht, I've yet to get my invitation to the Jerry Jones super yacht, said that when you're sitting like on a sofa out in the open area, it's like you're sitting in a lobby in a swanky New York City hotel. That's how nice the place is.
Yeah.
They have the excess money to go out and buy stuff like that. The ultimate stuff that human beings don't need. A giant floating city. They have that much money they can do it and spend $1, 2, 3 million a week just to maintain the freaking thing. So that's the difference here. And the bottom line is the entire sport is flush with billions.
Yeah.
The guys out there that are putting their lives on the line, literally, I thought the DeMar Hamlin situation would be the moment where we all had the epiphany that, yes, they do take some pretty serious physical risks, immediate and long term, when they play football. I thought it would make people a little more compassionate toward the realities of being an NFL player, but you still get this resentment. Oh, Saquon Barkley, how dare he want more? Well, he dare want more, and he got a little bit more, but the system is rigged against him.
Yeah, exactly right. The system is rigged, and, you know, at the bottom, you know, or at the end of the day, like we talked about with running backs, as freaky as they are and all that, we've gotten into this conversation with other, you know, scenarios throughout the league in our time together here. You look at it sometimes and go, okay, I mean, really, you know me, I'm a big Daniel Jones fan. You know I am. But I'm always going to keep it real and go, is Daniel Jones worth 4 times more than Saquon Barkley? 4 times more? He's 4 times the better and worth that? That's where, you know, at a baseline, that just is off a little bit. It's off. Like you can go back to the 49ers a few years ago when they go to the Super Bowl. Is Jimmy Garoppolo, who was making, what, $27 million then, was he 24 times better than Raheem Mostert, who was an awesome running back for their football team? No. So that's where it does seem a little cockeyed right now, and we got to figure some things out in that department.
Well, and you're absolutely right. That was the genesis of the problems with Julio Jones and
exactly,
the Falcons. When Matt Ryan's making 30 and he's making 15, he's like, wait a minute, this guy's not twice more important than I am to the team. But that's the way the system has evolved. And it all goes back to that analytic concept of surplus value, that the best quarterbacks are worth more than the average quarterback. The best running backs aren't that much more valuable than the average running back because there's so many guys that can go out there and do it. And that's the simple reality. And look, at this point, I can't imagine we're going to get to Dalvin Cook. I can't imagine Saquon Barkley doing anything other than going all out even if it's only 900,000 in incentives, he knows he needs to go out and have a great year, and he's already motivated to go out and play football well anyway. This idea of embellishing injuries or not running as hard or putting yourself on a pitch count, and just it's antithetical to the way football players
think. Oh, it is. You're right.
The problem that you're seizing upon,
yeah,
they use it against you.
Yeah.
That's what is the most disturbing about it. You find a guy who was wired the right way, like Saquon Barkley is, and the system uses it against them. That's one of the things that needs to change, but good luck getting it to change.
Yeah, good luck. We'll see. You're right. You know, we'll continue to fight the good fight. I'm just glad he's in camp. Yes, it's good for the Giants. Ultimately, I'm happy because I think it's the best thing for Saquon Barkley. And like we said yesterday, it's what I would suggest Josh Jacobs does too. I don't think he's doing himself any good by – don't make yourself – you know, what do I want to say? The example, the poster child, to screw yourself over to get everybody else more money. That's what I'd say to Josh Jacobs. I like him. We've been around him a few times. I got too much respect for him and know how good of a guy he is that I want to see him get his money and stay in shape and stay in the mentality of football and not fall off earth like, you know, like we said, like we saw Le'Veon Bell do when he tried to, you know, pull the same thing off.
And his anger over his situation is overcoming his love of the game. And it's going to cause him to do something that hurts himself short-term and maybe long-term because he's so pissed off at the Raiders. We talked about this yesterday. They don't pick up the fifth-year option, which sends a message to him, we don't think you're very good. You're right. Not good enough for us to pick up the fifth-year option. You're not in our plans beyond this year. Then he goes out, busts his ass, proves himself, earns a C on his jersey, opens eyes about how great he is to that team, and then they just tag him instead of giving him a long-term contract. So he is pissed, and he's acting on it. The report yesterday was he's left Las Vegas, and he doesn't intend to return anytime soon. And he's going to undermine his own personal interests because his interest of acting on his anger has overcome his interest of playing football, being productive, laying the foundation for next year. And that's fine. That's his decision. But the Raiders pissed him off more, Chris, than the Giants pissed off Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I think so. With Saquon, he still had the, you know, I think you could swallow that pill a little easier because he just came off an ACL injury and he wasn't quite himself. Right. And so there was some things here that are at play. Yeah, I could see Josh Jacobs being a little more disgruntled in his situation and how it played out. And of course, it's, you know, it's a new coaching regime like we talked about there with the Raiders, who are come from a place where, yeah, it was a platoon of running backs. So, yeah, there was a few things that were at play there that I think, you know, would make Josh Jacobs more angry than Saquon Barkley.
And, you know, to the extent that players at other positions would like to help running backs, or players would just like to help each other.
Yeah.
You want to build some leverage against the system that is screwing you. Here's exactly what should have happened with the New York Giants. You've got Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones both heading to market in the same cycle because they bet against Daniel Jones last year by not picking up his fifth-year option. So Barkley and Jones careening toward the open market. What they should have done, what their agents should have done, they should have come together and said collectively to the Giants, neither of us is signing. You're going to have to pick one of us to tag, and the other one is leaving or hitting the market, and you're going to have to pay him in competition with the other teams. See, the teams don't want to compete with the other teams. They don't want to have to match what someone else is willing to pay their guy. They want to dictate the terms to the guy with no alternative. So what Jones and Barkley should have done, and this is a lesson to teammates in the future, when two or more are coming to the market at the same time and you only got one tag to use, and they like to divide and conquer, let's sign one and tag the other. They were going to sign Barkley and tag Jones. Well, Barkley didn't take the offer. They said, fine, sorry, Saquon, sucks for you. We're going to sign Jones and tag you. If they both would have been joined at the hip and said, hey, Giants, neither of us are signing, you got to pick one. If you're willing to take that selfless risk that you're going to be the one who gets tagged, the other guy goes to the market. And that's one way one very real way to fight back against this system that is screwing the running backs and really all players.
Yeah.
Because Jones could have gotten to the market. Maybe they would have tagged Saquon and let him hit the market. Who knows how it would have played
out.
Yeah,
no, I don't, you know, I think you're onto something there. You know, maybe some tandem forces by the players, you know. This could be a thing, a new way to bargain. Yeah, join up a little bit when you got two marquee players. Or when you have a marquee player maybe that you know that they got to have, like with Daniel Jones, you know, maybe more situations where next time around a guy like Daniel Jones, he can go, you know what, you're going to have to franchise me for right now because I'm not signing anything until you sign Saquon. And then we'll talk about, you know, long-term contract. Because the quarterback, of course, we know is more times than not going to get paid, going to get taken care of. But I hear what you're saying. There might have to be a little bit more conversations between players and agents as far as game planning, what they want to do. And maybe that's the way that the players can fight back against the system and how it's currently, you know, set up right now.
That was one of the big points made on Saturday night in the running back Zoom. Now, look, the union is always inclined to blame the agents, and the agents are inclined to blame the union. There's just some toxicity there that needs to be cleared out. But the union wants the agents to do a better job of collaborating and colluding. It's okay for the players and the agents to collude.
Yeah.
It's not okay for the teams to do it. That's another way that you can push back against a system that is rigged against the players. The agents and the players can come up with collective action. They can come up with joint strategies that they can use. They can communicate more about the offers they're making and the offers they're rejecting and the offers they're accepting. But there's so much competition among the agents that it's hard to get the agents to work with other agents because they view themselves as mortal enemies. I mean, they hate each other, you know, because the whole thing is about trying to recruit this next crop of guys coming in to the draft, trying to steal clients from each other. I'm amazed, and it's died down in recent years. There was a time where I was shocked that, you know, one agent hadn't killed another agent or hired someone to kill him. And I'm not saying that facetiously. It was so poisonous. I thought one of these days somebody's getting whacked over this. That's how much they hate each other.
All right,
somebody's going to get blown up in their car.
We're
in
going
Sicily.
Full circle. That's how we started the show with mafia talk. We're going to end it with end the segment with mafia
Monday,
talk.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday,
yeah,
Sunday.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but I hear you. It is. It's a competitive market, and you're right. You're saying it right. And you know, agents, they want to one up the other agent on a deal. Or, ooh, I got this connection with this team and I'm going to look good and I don't care about what you got to do over there. But, you know, maybe they'll have to start rethinking it too to capitalize, especially with the marquee players and the marquee agents. I think that's where those are the guys, again, that I think can make the most headway here and really help the rest of the league out. As if they play hardball, it'll filter down to the rest of the locker room.
By the way, before we take a break, I want to mention that coming up later in the program, we are going to attempt to play a game that has taken over my life, at least for the periods of the day that it comes out. The crossover grid football game. The guy in charge of that has put together a specific grid just for us. Posted a link to it on Twitter. We're going to try to solve it later. I have not looked at it. I will admit that I saw a Vikings logo.
Okay.
If we made
the request, it's of course something Vikings has to be on there.
but it's a fun game, and we'll explain later how it works. If you're a football fan and if you've been following the sport for a while and you can recollect who played where, and who was drafted where, and who had which accomplishments, it is a lot of fun.
It's pretty cool.
We're going to do it later in the program. Yeah. And my concern is, it's one thing for me to do it with my phone or at my computer. Anytime you throw in that element of the red light is on, there's a chance you're going to go Cindy Brady and just freeze up.
Right.
So we'll collaborate on it and help each other out, and we'll try to solve it. We'll do that coming up later in the program. For now, though, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more PFT Live right after this.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Buy me a necklace like that. Get me a damn PFT chain.
No.
Okay? And I'll wear it. All right? I'll be your buddy. Isn't it time? You're the one with all the money. You buy me the chain and make me feel good. Come on.
I can get behind that chain because I did not see any diamonds. I saw no sparkles on that. I'm happy
gold,
to get
though.
You.
A lot of gold.
A green plastic that looks like emerald. I'm a big believer in some sage advice that Chad Johnson gave to all players years ago. And it really does make sense. Don't buy diamond earrings. Just get the fake ones because everybody's going to think they're real because you're rich. Why do you want to screw around with these expensive-ass diamond earrings that you might lose? Who was it that lost one? Remember, was it Julio Jones that lost one somewhere?
Somebody,
like, they get lost during games. They get lost while they're jet skiing.
I was gonna say, Aaron Jones lost a locket that was important to him about his father who had passed away, but that wasn't it. You're right. Somebody else lost a diamond
or
something.
That's different.
Yeah.
But you know, nobody's going to show up with that little glass where you, like, squeeze your eye and you hold it and they're going to inspect it to make sure it's real. That little magnet. Isn't that weird? Like, you've got this little portable microscope that just kind of fits in your eye socket and you squeeze down on it. No one's going to do that.
Yeah,
but to make sure that you actually have
football
a real diamond earring
like
and not cubic zirconia.
No, they're going to be walking around going, I'm a Fugazi. I'm wearing Fugazi diamonds over here. I'm not real deal.
You can't tell. Yeah. They look the same.
I don't know. No one's
carrying around that little monocle microscope.
You can tell a little bit because I have been privy to this. I did have some players through the years that, you know, went down this way of, you know, cubic zirconium or whatever, right? That was what guys, the fake diamonds. But if you see cubic zirconium next to some guy, let's say, who's on the team who is making $20 million a year and he's got real big diamonds, trust me, you can tell when you see him next to each other. You're going to go, damn, that one's blinging and shiny and everything, and that thing looks dull. What the hell is up with that? That's when it gets seen. But you're right. Other than that, like when you can compare it, you know, most people are not going to know, and they're going to assume, you know, a pro athlete's wearing real diamonds.
I'm now very curious what that thing is called. I have found on Google, I don't know how to pronounce it. I don't know which vowel is pronounced and which one is silent, but it's L-O-U-P-E. And for $3.99, are you kidding me? You can get 2X, 3X, 5X, 10X, and 7X, $3.99 for all of them. That must not be high quality. But it's called L-O-U-P-E, the little one-eyed microscope that you use to look and see whether or not a diamond is Fugazi.
What do you think that chain costs? Just real quick. What do you think? Ballpark guess. What do you think Sauce Gardner spent on that? Isn't it hilarious that Sauce Gardner's buying
whatever it is, it was
the richest guy on the football team and jewelry? It's hilarious.
The guy's making $50 million a year, and you're going to buy him the jewelry? That makes no sense whatsoever. Whatever it was too much. Hopefully he got it for free or at least at a big discount because they're publicizing the whole thing. But that looks like something that was probably $75,000 or $100,000. I don't know. Is that right, or is it more than that?
It might be more than that. It might be more than that. I don't know. But I would say, yes, it's north of $100,000. I would say that.
Unless he took Chad Johnson's advice and it's all cubic zirconia.
He's tricking
Rodgers. That would be awesome.
He's tricking
that would be awesome if it's just glue. That would be great. Okay. Eventually, there may be another chain that Sauce Gardner is putting around the neck of a new teammate. Dalvin Cook in play for the Jets, in play for the Dolphins, in play for the Patriots, in play for who knows who else. But of the teams in the AFC East, the Bills never get mentioned. And even after the Nyheim Hines injury, and it turned out he was in a jet ski accident of all things that caused him to suffer the torn ACL. Dalvin Cook was on with Rich Eisen yesterday, and Eisen asked whether or not the Bills are a possibility, given that Hines is likely out for the year.
That'd be exciting. That'd be exciting for me and my family. It would. You know, the whole thing about, you know, when they brought the whole thing up for me and my brother playing together, it was just about me not being in his way. I want my brother to go tear the league up, which he is, because he's prepared for it. And I don't want to be the one being in his way of stopping him from doing it. So, like, that was the whole thing. But, like, you know, they down the back. So it's not out the picture for me to go, you know, go play there for, play there with him.
Yeah, I mean, all along, Dalvin Cook's position has been, that's my brother's team. And he doesn't want to get in his brother's way. And one of the things he's sensitive about as it relates to the future of the position, his brother hasn't gotten paid yet. His brother's only entering the second year of his career. He's thinking about him. You know, for most of these guys, it's kind of an amorphous thing. Why do we care about the next generation of running backs? Well, Dalvin Cook has a brother who is in the next generation of running backs. So he's been very sensitive to that every step of the way.
Yeah.
I just think that Dalvin Cook doesn't fit with what the Bills are going to be looking for to replace Nyheim Hines, unless he plans to return punts and kickoffs, because that's what they're looking for.
Right.
A guy who's going to be lower on the depth chart and also play special teams.
Right.
And that's not what Dalvin Cook is going to be.
Exactly. Right. Exactly right. And then, you know, not only that, but probably share carries with James Cook, share carries with Damian Harris, who's still, let's not forget, a pretty damn good running back who they signed from New England this year. Right. And then, yes, Nyheim Hines, as we talked about yesterday, that role was going to be, yeah, sure, a few carries and all that. But I think his real worth was going to be in the pass game, his ability to run routes. Hey, read this coverage, make this appropriate cut on this coverage. Oh, you got that coverage, now make this cut, right? That's his value. I don't think Dalvin Cook wants to play that role. You know, Dalvin Cook wants to carry the football. He's dangerous doing that, like we talked about many times, you know, leading up to our break and all that. He, you know, not that he has to be 25 carries a game, but I'm sure he's looking at a place where he's going to go, wait, I'm the main guy, you know, for sure, and I'm getting, you know, the bulk or the workman's worth of carrying the football a little bit.
Well, that's absolutely right, and that leads to, and I'm going to go out of order here, Pete. I tried to let you know in the sheets. I haven't gotten an acknowledgement.
Good. Let's go.
I want you to hear what Cook had to say, because I hadn't heard him ask this question. Everybody's been focusing on the future with Dalvin Cook when he does media appearances. Eisen asked him about the Vikings and basically when he knew it was going to end for him in Minnesota. Here's what Cook had to say to that yesterday.
I kind of knew it was coming during the season, to be honest. And it was going to have to, like, you know, the relationship of, you know, the run in the past wasn't there all year. So it was like, you know, I want to go somewhere to get the ball. And I think, you know, they want to get the ball out wide. So it was kind of something that was well needed for both of us. And, you know, I kind of knew it was coming during the season.
Yeah, and I went back and looked at the numbers. Last year they did skew toward the pass more than the run, and
right,
his touches per game were down. He went from a career high of 22.2 carries per game and 24.4 touches per game in 2020 down to 15.5 carries last year and 17.8 touches. So with Kevin O'Connell there, they were moving toward the passing game. And at some point, as you're seeing that happen, if you're Dalvin Cook, you're saying, well, there's no way in hell they're going to pay me $10 million next year if this is the way the wind is blowing. If this is becoming a pass-first team, they don't need me at $10 million per year. So when he's already thinking that, when they re-sign Alexander Mattison for like $3.5-4 million per year, he knew it was over at that point. If he didn't already know it 100%, when they pay Alexander Mattison a bargain basement amount relative to high-end veteran tailbacks, that's when the $10 million is going to get ripped up at some point for Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, I'm sure. Hey, listen, Dalvin Cook, he seems to have a pretty good feel for this league and how it works, and he's pretty smart when it comes that way. I'm sure he saw the writing on the wall, let alone, you know, I think we both know, and I've heard from people around the NFL, that I think there was some discontent or disgruntled Vikings, you know, people in the organization that he didn't handle his shoulder situation 2 years ago better and all of that. So I'm sure there was enough signals there that he realized it. And yes, they definitely swayed towards the passing game and all that. I think this is what's encouraging to me, Mike, when I hear those comments and, you know, hearing him saying it's almost is always different than reading him. It's just like the thing I'm encouraged is he still wants to be the bell cow. He still wants to be, you know, he's not looking to go like, oh, let me go somewhere and like spread out the carries. He wants the ball. He still wants to be the main guy like we were talking about and do 20, 22 carries, 25 carries a game. And I think that's encouraging. I mean, we know he's still got some juice left in the tank. That is for sure. He might not be what he was 3 or 4 years ago, but damn, he's still good and dangerous and can go to the house from anywhere like we've talked about.
And see, he was asked that next question by Rich Eisen. What is the right system for you if you're looking for a system different than Minnesota? And he meandered a little bit because I don't think he wants to burn any bridges. He doesn't want to foreclose any potential opportunities. He wants to go to a place where he can help them win and also run the ball. But I look, this is part of the reality of being an older running back. And I think this is the positive side of teams going with a committee approach, especially if you're older and you've got some wear and tear. It's better to extend your career. Like, if I can make $8 million for one more year and go get thrown into the meat grinder, go through the car crashes every week and have nothing left on the back end, isn't it better to make $3 or $4 million for 3 years or 4 years playing a complimentary role and not getting the crap beat out of me every week and having fewer touches, having fewer injuries, having a longer overall career in the NFL, even if I'm not being paid as much right now? It's all a question of how bright you want that candle to burn.
Yeah.
Do you want it to just flash or do you want it to simmer? And I think that, and that's been a reality. Now, I remember asking free agents and incoming draft picks, like how, as at running back, what would you rather do? Do you want to be that guy that gets the ball 25 times a game? Or would you rather split it up knowing you could play a lot longer if you're never the guy that has just had the crap beat out of you week in and week out?
Yeah, it's a tough one. You know, it is. You're right. I mean, yeah, you want to be the guy and be the man, and yeah, then that candle will burn out a little quicker. But, of course, that's the chance you have maybe to make it that huge payday. Your other way around, you're talking it right. You got a chance to be, you know, hang around the league a little bit more and collect some lower paychecks a little more consistently. But that, there's risk in that too, as we know, because there's times where, oh, well, you know, hey, it's only $3.5 or $4 million, but it's year 10 and he's a running back, and okay, let's just get the younger guy in there too. So there's risks either way. It's a tough one. I will say this. I mean, yeah, I don't know if you want to go somewhere and be 25 carries a game. Dalvin Cook, when I look at it, a situation like the Miami Dolphins would be perfect, right? Where they do have some other running backs, but he'll clearly be the guy. They're going to play a style of football that's not going to be, let's get three tight ends in here and we're all going to play in the box and just run downhill old school, right? They're not going to play that. It's going to be a wide open game that fits him. Oh, Tyreek, Waddle. Oh, Tyreek, Waddle. Oh, there's this. And then, oh, here's up the middle. They're worried about all the screens and the pass plays. Now you got this room, Dalvin Cook. That's the type of situation where I look at him to be the most dangerous and could extend his career because of maybe less people and less people in the box and less car crashes, like we always say.
And look, I think the other reality here is that given the position that he plays, time is on his side.
It is. That's
because
right.
Because injuries are going to happen.
Yep.
Especially at the running back position. And all it takes is one team that thinks it has its guy, and that guy suffers any injury that puts him out for an extended period of time. All of a sudden, there's an opportunity for Dalvin Cook that wasn't there before. And if it's a team that's a contender,
yeah,
gets a little desperate. Think back to what happened in Minnesota the year before Cook arrived, 2016. Teddy Bridgewater's knee implodes late August. They got desperate to find a replacement. They gave up 1 and a 4 to get Sam Bradford because they had no choice. You get a team that's feeling pretty good about itself, and they've got, you know, one running back, big name starter, and then all of a sudden he's gone. That's when the money may be there for Dalvin Cook.
That's right.
At this point, it makes sense to wait because this is how you use the fact that running back position is injury prone to your advantage. You wait for someone to get injured. It's one thing to wait for a quarterback to get injured because when's that going to happen? They got the red jersey on and they're not playing in the preseason anyway. The starters aren't, at least on the smart teams, they're not. Quarterback? Not going to get injured, most likely. Running back, going to get injured. Opportunity may arise for Dalvin Cook, Chris.
Yeah, exactly right. Time is on his side. I'm glad you brought it up because that's where I kind of wanted to go with it. You don't have to make a quick decision and be hasty here. You know, running back, first off, is probably the easiest position to change teams or systems in all of football. Once you learn, hey, wait, they call this hole the 4-hole, this one the 5-hole, you learn a little nuances in the pass protection. A lot of things are similar for the running back in that world. So he doesn't need to be like, oh, no, I need to get somewhere and figure out the offense. And like you're saying, too, use it to your advantage. You know, I could think of two situations right off the bat here where it could go a little crazy or hairy, and Dalvin Cook could end up getting – you know, what he wants here or a situation. Hey, let's look at the Dallas Cowboys. What are the Dallas
Cowboys?
Don't
name names. Don't jinx. Don't put the Malocchio on anyone.
Well, no.
I've tried to avoid mentioning names.
All right. Well, this guy's already got a little issue. But what if you're the Dallas Cowboys? They're looking at themselves going, they're in the Super Bowl window. They get here mid-August, late August. Tony Pollard ain't going to be ready. It just doesn't look good. He's not going to be ready for maybe an extended period into the regular season before he's 100%. You know, they could come in swooping in and go, hey, we need you. We need a guy. You got to come in here. They got a little money in the salary cap right now. The Broncos, what if Javonte Williams doesn't quite look the same after coming back from his knee injury? And Sean Payton goes, damn, you know, I know we got Samaje Perine, but he's kind of for third down. We don't have a guy here, blah, blah, blah. All right, give Dalvin Cook the extra $2 or $3 million a year. It's all right. Hell, we need him. So that's the things he can use into his advantage, let alone if something, you know, unforeseen happens like you explained.
And the other thing I'll say, since it does not involve an injury, if and when the Raiders throw their hands in the air and
receive
the tender from Josh Jacobs,
right,
that's an opportunity for Dalvin Cook that currently isn't on the radar screen because it needs somebody to run between the tackles, and Dalvin Cook has shown over the years that he can do just that. One last clip from Dalvin Cook's appearance yesterday with Rich Eisen. Here is Cook talking about the Zoom call that happened on Saturday night, the culmination of a group text chain that started last week at the behest of Derrick Henry. Here's what Cook had to say about when they all got together on Saturday night.
What were the solutions out there to?
That's what we're trying to get to right now, and I don't think we came up to that equation yet. I don't think we're trying to figure out where we can go without hurting anybody's pockets. We trying to get to a point where, like, you know, we don't want to – we obviously want to play football and we want to help somebody win, but we don't want to – you know, everybody got their family to take care of and, you know, real things to do in real life. And I know, you know, we don't want to take from nobody's pocket, like, as far as, like, not being out there on the field. But, like, we got to come up with something. I think that's what the guy's still trying to come up with because we active every day in that chat, every day.
See – and this explains why Saquon Barkley showed up and took his money. No one expects him to become the face and the voice of this effort to make some big sacrifice for the greater good for the running backs, because the reality is it's not going to matter. It goes back to Josh Jacobs. Josh is mad. Josh is going to hurt himself financially,
yes,
and it's not going to change anything. Mm-hmm. I keep going back. I wrote about it yesterday, and I'm going to keep banging this drum until one of the running backs or the agents, and I'm going to start trying to reach out to some of these folks directly, assuming that they don't press the, you know, GFY button when I call them. You need to come together now and tell the league we're not going to be at the offseason program next year, period. You're not going to have a single running back. We're going to spend the next 8 months doing everything we can to pressure all running backs to not show up. Good luck with OTAs with no running backs there. That's the only thing you can do collectively. And there's no downside to it because, You don't get fined. You don't get in trouble. It's not a strike. The only guys that lose anything are guys who have workout bonuses, and maybe they make an exemption for them, and those guys just show up and not really do anything. I don't know. But that's the only way to put the pressure on to get the Sims solution. Nobody else. This goes back to you. You get the credit for it. A league-wide fund that pays the running backs for performance, playing time, yards gained, touchdowns scored, etc. That's what needs to be put in place. And if they can convince the league that none of them are going to be there in the offseason program next year, maybe they have a shot at getting the league's attention. And even then, it's not going to be easy. But that's the only real solution that has a chance of working, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. They got to get together here and collectively put pressure on the NFL. And it's good. It's good to hear Dalvin Cook saying that they're talking every day. They're on text every day. You know, no Android phones there in that group. They're all on it together. They're good. So, yeah, but it's encouraging. And I think we're going to continue to back them up. And I think you're going to see players in around the league back the running backs up too. Because like we talked about, the players realize, yes, you can't win football without running backs. The players realize that the freakiest guy on the team is kind of getting screwed over more times than not, and that's not right. And I think that's where they're going to continue to have the support.
And look, even though this is an old problem, what they've done so far counts as a victory because it has become the biggest issue in football that we talk about every day, that everybody talks about every day. I got requests lined up, and I'm sure you do too. Hey, can you come on and talk about the running back situation? Let's talk about the running back situation. And Austin Eckler started this conversation back in March, but there was too much other stuff going on for it to resonate. The real moment where it all came together was when Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs didn't get their long-term contracts when the stupid-ass deadline came and went last Monday. That's what really sparked all this. And so, guys, so far, congratulations. You've done a great job of getting people aware of the issue, getting people to care about the issue. Now you got to get the union to care about it, and you got to get the league to care about it. And the best way, and maybe the only way, tell the league, tell the teams, you're not going to have a single running back next year for the voluntary phases of the offseason program. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. Tyreek Hill had an off-field situation that popped up on Father's Day. The civil liability has been resolved. Will there be responsibility to the National Football League? We'll discuss that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.